Gummer, Gummer, Rooster Valley Avenue. This is BeelPod.com, the week in Georgia in English, coming to you from the jewel of the Caucasus, Tatsminda, Tbilisi. Today is Thursday, the 25th of June, 2015. On this date, in 1530, the Augsburg Confession was presented to the Holy Roman Empire. In 1876, the Battle of Little Bighorn and the death of Lieutenant Colonel George Armstrong Custer. 1906, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, millionaire Harry Thaw shoots and kills architect Stanford White. 1910, Igor Stravinsky's ballet, The Firebird, is premiered in Paris, bringing him to prominence as a composer. 1940, France officially surrenders to Germany. 1942, Eisenhower takes control of U.S. troops in Europe. 1944, the Battle of Tali-Ihantala, the largest battle ever fought in the Nordic countries, begins between Finland and the USSR. 1948, the Berlin airlift begins. 1950, the Korean War begins with an invasion of South Korea by North Korea. 1956, the last Packard is produced. 1975, Mozambique achieves independence from Portugal. 1991, Croatia and Slovenia declare independence from Yugoslavia. 1993, Kim Campbell is sworn in as the first female prime minister of Canada. Michael Jackson and Farrah Fawcett both died 6 years ago today. Birthdays today are Antonio Gaudí, Lord Louis Mountbatten, George Orwell, Carly Simon, Sonia Sotomayor, George Michael, and Lala Anthony. I'm your host, Mark Mullen. As ever, this podcast was written by Ari Swieka. And today only, we have, I know you'll all be happy to hear, the Tbilpod.com mascot and conscience, Will Dunbar. Thanks again for those posting on the forum. If you'd like to comment or ask a question, go to Tbilpod.com or send us an email at Tbilpod@gmail.com. Following up on the flood that ravished Tbilisi on the 13th of June, Prime Minister Khadabashvili said that the government is considering a set of measures to increase safety along the Veda River channel, including installing an early warning system and a resettlement plan from high-risk zones. Critics say the government didn't take accurate measures. On the night of the 13th of June, authorities should have blocked traffic on the Amida GB Highway connecting Tamarashvili Street with Hero Square along the River Veda channel after the massive landslide that happened on the Skaneti-Batania Road outside Tbilisi. The landslide caused by heavy rainfall dammed up the Veda River, which then burst. So the government established a state commission with invited experts. Love the expert heavy. Among them, geologists, architects, urban planners, engineers, to elaborate a comprehensive plan on how areas along the Veda River channel should be rehabilitated in a way that would minimize damages in the event of similar floodings. Among the most immediate measures would be installing alarm systems along the 30-kilometer-long section of Veda River channel, as well as a 3 million lari project with flood barriers at some sections of the river. The commission will also work to elaborate a resettlement plan for families whose homes are located in the risk zones. There are 106 families whose houses have been damaged as a result of the flood. The state commission is also deliberating on the fate of the highway linking Tamarashvili Street with Hero Square, parts of which have been heavily damaged by the flood. Some now argue that the way the road was constructed 5 years ago exacerbated consequences of the flooding. No environmental impact study was done prior to the construction. Khadabashvili said that there was an alternative project for the highway that was safer, but it cost 140 million lari, whereas the one that was used cost 80 million lari. As a reminder, the EU has pledged 3 million euros for housing solutions following the flood. Total flood damage exceeded 100 million lari. So far, 10 million has been allocated from the central budget. 7.5 million has been raised through donations, according to Finance Minister Khaduri. He's also said that efforts are underway to attract funding, including through soft loans from various international financial institutions. On the 18th of June, BI said that he would fill the Tbilisi flood relief funding gap if there is any.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a few things. So the Vera has flooded several times in the last 100 years. It's once every 40-odd years. There's a catastrophic flood. The last was in the 60s, back in the 20s as well. But it's quite a rare thing. I mean, Georgia is a place of quite extreme weather, earthquakes, of hailstorms that destroy crops. And these things tragically do happen. I think blaming the construction of the road is perhaps missing the point. The road, indeed, you can see the website of the company that did it, and they're very proud about the technology of putting the Vera in the tunnels and so on, which we now know weren't up to the job of taking this massive flood and landslide that happened on June the 13th. But then there was no solution that would have taken that amount of debris. A whole mountain fell in the river, and there's just no road that can be built by human hands that can really withstand that sort of thing. The real issue here, which Khadabashvili has sort of touched on, but is understandably unwilling to really get to the bottom of, is the fact that for many years, back to the Soviet period, there's been no real oversight of any development, be that apartment buildings or road construction, clearing the existing culverts that the Vera was in, which were built in the 50s. There's been no maintenance, there's been no standards imposed, which, of course, exacerbate the problem. There's no plan for Tbilisi. There's just chaotic development all over the city, and that is bound to exacerbate the problems. Just like in 2012, when five people were killed in a different river valley in Tbilisi, in Kutsanisi, where there were jerry-built homes right in the valley that got swept away, and five people died. So this is the real issue. It's not about blaming this specific road or the failure to install an early warning system. Is the fact that there is no system, there is no systematic plan for the development of Tbilisi. And that's no one's fault, which is, you know, annoying for the government, who would love to blame someone and point fingers, but that's what needs to be done.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I will say that the previous government, one of the reasons that highway needed to be built is because that the previous government was so pro-car that traffic would have been insufferable in a city without that highway.
Traffic is insufferable with the city with that highway. But yes, you don't lose weight by buying a bigger fridge. More roads are not the answers to congestion.
Right. And so they were very, very proud of as they called it, they would always use car ownership as a proxy for development and say, look how developed we are now considering how many people own cars. And they set up this super efficient car market that meant that most of the cars in Azerbaijan and even Kazakhstan were coming from Georgia. You know, and that's all well and good, but it means that, you know, that there's just an unimaginable amount of cars with the catalytic converters cut out of them and substandard leaded gasoline all over the place. And if the other plan that was never implemented, which was the tram system that would have gone down through Vakhe down Rustaveli, if they had, you know, increased taxation on cars, dealt with parking and that sort of stuff, then that highway would not have needed to have been built. However, if that highway had not been built, there would have been a lot more people living down there. And if they had not solved those problems, then more people probably would have been killed.
And as a point of information, in fact, the people who lost their lives and lost their homes were in the bit of the Vera Valley, actually just at the beginning and even before that highway starts. So that obviously the highway construction had no impact on them. But what I will say, just as an afterthought on the whole flooding thing, is part of the issue is to do with pressures of development on the virgin land around Tbilisi, deforestation and so on. I think this is really the time to be rejecting grandiose schemes such as that of Bidzina's Panorama Tbilisi, which is going to destroy an entire forested ridge above the city in a different part of town, which is only going to make problems like we saw in June and like we saw in 2012 much, much worse. So I think these grandiose, car-heavy and environmentally destructive projects on the edge of the city are, you know, especially now, look incredibly ill-advised.
Well, I mean, what they should do if they had a plan and would work like other more developed of similarly sized cities is that they would have big housing projects carefully planned in areas that are not of historical significance that have good traffic throughways nearby. I mean, and there are plenty of places in which that could happen, particularly on the left bank, and particularly across from Sabartalo around Gildani Mukiani and places like that, as well as farther out in Varkatili. But, you know, destroying historical areas in order to do that is certainly not the solution in a place where there will never, ever be any parking. The search is still on for the bodies of three people who went missing in the flood. Minister of Internal Affairs Vakhtang Gumalauri said that there are rescue workers in full swing over the affected areas. Now they are also searching the Tkvari River for bodies from Tbilisi down to Rustavi. In terms of cleanup, a large part of the gravel and sand from the flood has been removed. Heavy machinery is continuing work. Earlier this week, trained employees working for the government replaced volunteers. The health ministry has also sent teams this week to disinfect five areas in Tbilisi. I wonder how they're doing that were hit by the flood to prevent the spread of diseases that can thrive in puddles of waters, especially if they're dead animals. The areas are Mziudi Park, the zoo, Svanidze Street, Skhneti Street, Skhneti Highway. About 2,000 people have been vaccinated against tetanus as a preventative measure. Also on health issues, on the 23rd of June, two metal drums containing liquid chlorine were found in the former public swimming pool Laguna Verde, among the flood debris. They were recovered by emergency forces from the Ministry of Internal Affairs. Following up on zoo animals, on the 17th of June, an African penguin that survived was found swimming in a river 60 kilometers away near the border with Azerbaijan. On the 23rd of June, another penguin was found alive in the mud by soldiers as they were cleaning the lower section of the zoo, which was completely covered in mud and uprooted trees. The search was on for escaped predators around the area of Turtle Lake. Interior Ministry reported they received about 47 reports about the predators in different locations, but none of the reports turned out to be true. A tiger and a hyena from the zoo are still missing.
No. The hyena has been found dead in the zoo.
Okay. On the 24th of June, the hyena was found dead among the zoo debris. Thank you, Will, for clarifying. On the 23rd of June, the zoo, Tbilisi Zoo, published for the first time the complete list of animals they had before the flood on the night of the 13th to the 14th of June. As a reminder, last week they were saying that all the missing animals were accounted for, but a man was killed by an escaped tiger. The list shows that there were 14 lions, three of which died, six were killed, five survived. There were seven tigers, six were killed and one missing. Two bears survived out of 13, one of four hyenas, two died, two were killed, and one was just recently found dead. The white tiger ran away on the night of the disaster, hid in an old warehouse for a few days, then attacked and killed a man. It's been put down, of course. Three jaguars died. Also, four wolves died, seven were killed, and only two of them survived. All four foxes died. Animal rights activists demonstrated outside of Tbilisi City Hall on 21st of June, demanding to shut down the zoo. The demonstration was organized by Vegan Georgia. People carried posters saying, "A zoo is a jail and we don't want the zoo." They said the conditions for the animals at the Tbilisi Zoo were terrible. It should have been shut down years ago, and instead they can create an animal reserve outside of Tbilisi. Only a few dozen people came to the protest, but an online petition demanding the shutdown of the zoo gathered more than 1,500 signatures. Following up on previous month's stories, on the 19th of June, a judge in Tbilisi City Court ordered the release of five former Ministry of Defense and General Staff officials from pretrial detention on the personal guarantee of a group of five lawmakers from the Free Democrats Party. Five men spent almost 8 months in pretrial detention. Their release comes after the prosecution dropped its objection against their release on the 18th of June. As a reminder, on the 28th of October 2014, one former and four serving officials from the Ministry of Defense and General Staff were arrested and charged with misspending 4.1 million lari in an alleged sham tender on laying fiber optic cable in 2013. At the time, Free Democrats leader Irakli Alassania was defense minister. He now said that the prosecutor's decision to drop their objections against the release of the ex-officials was an attempt to save face, since the defense team was preparing a similar motion and there was no reason for the judge to decline it. There's also been a conflict between Alassania and BI through the media. Alassania has repeatedly said since October that the case was politically motivated and that the former officials in detention are BI's prisoners. BI said on the 18th of June that Alassania is lying about the arrests being politically motivated. Then on the 19th of June, said on Rustaviotti that BI's mafia type of rule will fail in Georgia. As a note, the prosecutor's decision to drop its objection against release of the accused men comes 40 days before the expiration of the 9-month pretrial detention period. The trial into the cable case is now at the preliminary or pretrial hearing stage, when the judge decides on the admissibility of evidence submitted by the parties and hears various motions from them. Earlier this month, Tbilisi City Court ruled in favor of the defense's motion and found a key piece of the prosecutor's evidence, an expert report assessing the engineers and other aspects of the fiber optic cable project, to be inadmissible. But the prosecution appealed the ruling and the Court of Appeals overturned the lower court's decision.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not exactly surprising that they did this on June the 19th, just after someone had been killed by a tiger. So they announced the release when everyone's worried about being attacked by a massive cat in the streets of Tbilisi, and so the authorities decide to release these almost certainly completely innocent people when everyone is otherwise engaged. It just sort of shows how, A, under political control, and B, shameful much of the prosecutor's office still is.
Yes, this particular case about the bent tender by the defense ministry is complete BS. Everybody knows, anyone who knows anything about the case, and there are several people who have looked at it quite carefully, know that there is absolutely nothing to this case, and there's no reason that they should have put in pretrial detention. They could have, you know, investigated the case without, you know, having these guys in jail the whole time.
Well, they needed to force Alassania's hand back when they wanted him to go. But the main thing is about this case, and also there was another case back in the very early days of this government with the Agriculture Ministry, is these guys are facing criminal charges for, in the prosecutor's view, making the wrong choice in terms of a tender application. So they are facing criminal charges for choosing one tender applicant over another. And the very idea that you might have to face jail for going with the slightly more expensive but speedier delivery option as opposed to the cheapest chips option when it comes to purchasing tractors or indeed fibre optic cable is not what any European country or aspiring member of the EU ought to be doing.
Indeed. Pleasure to agree with you, Will. On the 24th of June, the President's office announced that it is launching an open process to select a candidate for the central bank governor to replace the current head of the central bank after his term expires. The announcement comes 8 months before Giorgi Kadaghidze's 7-year term expires. According to the Constitution, a candidate for a vacant seat, central bank's 7-member board, has to be named by the President, then confirmed by Parliament. The President appoints one of the members of the board as a central bank governor. But the law in the National Bank of Georgia specifies that the board members select among themselves a candidate for the central bank chief submitted to nomination of the president to the president for confirmation. So technically, the process now involves the selection of a new board member. The president's economic advisor said the consultations will be held with international financial institutions, NGOs, relevant expert communities, business associations, banking sector, government ministries with economic portfolio, and with the National Bank itself. They also reiterated the president's strong opposition to a bill that proposes stripping the National Bank of its supervisory functions of financial institutions and transfers them to a separate entity. This is incredibly important. I mean, for those of you who are not following this, this is something that will very much influence the lari and the budget, the strength of the currency, which, as we know, is fairly weak, which does not have that much to do with this government, but has a little bit to do with this government. It mostly has to do with the strength of the dollar and the weakness of the ruble. But this will be an extremely important appointment, and everybody is watching it very carefully as sort of an economic weather vane, because this government has not been particularly successful economically, and it's not really clear how well they know that.
Well, this appointment is not nearly as important as what's going on in Parliament right now. So President Margvelashvili could nominate one of those penguins to be the chairman of the board of the central bank, as long as that chairman of the board of the central bank is not under the auspices of the Prime Minister's office, which is what the bill currently in Parliament basically proposes. It proposes taking away the supervisory powers of the central bank to another council, a newly created council, which would be directly subordinate, essentially, to the majority in Parliament, i.e. to the Prime Minister. That will strip all independence from the central bank. It will put the Prime Minister directly in charge of commercial banks, huge economic powerhouses like TBC and Bank of Georgia, listed on the London Stock Exchange, Georgia's most successful businesses by far, will be stripped of their independence, be completely at the beck and call of the political leadership at the time. That's the real issue. I mean, yes, we need a decent central bank governor in there, but if this law goes through Parliament, then the central bank government won't matter at all because everything will be under the Prime Minister's office.
Yes, that is true. And let's hope that that's not going to go through. If that does happen, what it will mean, in effect, is there'll be a huge hit to the share prices of the publicly listed companies, the ones that are real businesses that are sufficiently transparent. And you know, in essence, TBC and Bank of Georgia that are traded on the London Stock Exchange, I mean, technically they're overseen by the Georgia National Bank, but really they're overseen by the London Stock Exchange in terms of their reporting requirements. What it'll mean is their share price will take a giant hit, and who will benefit will be the tiny pocket banks, either Russian or owned by individuals,
or
indeed other individual banks, or owned by somebody like, for example, Aliyev's wife, like Pasha Bank,
or
others. And so those little tiny banks that are not listed or private or are not particularly transparent will have an enormous advantage.
So, I mean, for those of you who like scurrilous gossip, the real story here is Nodar Djabkashvili, who I think is currently the Minister of Infrastructure, I want to say, was the guy who was a very successful central banker in the 90s. He set up the lari. He was a bit of a hero back when Georgia was really, really in trouble. And he successfully introduced the Lari. He then went on to work with Bidzina. Of course, when Bidzina was trying to get to power in 2011 and 2012, what the National Movement government did then was use extreme strong-arm tactics and dirty tricks to try and prevent Bidzina from running by basically taking over Kartu Bank. They forced it into special measures, which basically meant that the National Bank of Georgia, under Kadagidze, took over the running of Kartu Bank and began to try to run it into the ground. Djebrahashvili, who was the head of Kartu Bank before he was forced out by this UNM takeover, was understandably extremely angry about this. He was Bidzina's choice to head up the central bank once they won power. When Bidzina realized that the IMF and the World Bank were telling him, and indeed every embassy, were telling him that you can't get rid of Kadagidze because he's got a seven-year term, Djebrahashvili suggested that the alternative would be to arrest him, and has been calling for his arrest ever since. And if you get to meet him, he will bend your ear about how it's necessary to arrest Kadagidze. So the real story here is Bidzina's bank and his successful former central banker who ran it, were really badly hurt by Kadagidze under Misha, and this is their revenge.
Yes. Following up on last week's Ponchisi story on the 17th of June, the Tbilisi City Court ordered pretrial detention for Ayouf Bourchashvili, who was arrested on the 14th of June on charges of recruiting fighters for Islamic State. The three other men who the prosecution claims were recruited by Bourchashvili and were heading to Syria via Turkey were also sent to pretrial detention. Bourchashvili has been charged under two separate clauses of the criminal code. One is Article 327, involving recruitment for a terrorist organization carrying a prison term from 5 to 10 years. The other is Article 328, involving joining a terrorist organization of a foreign country or providing support to it in terrorist activities, which carries a prison term from 10 to 17 years. Prosecution's case at this stage includes testimonies of up to 70 witnesses. One of them is believed to be a direct witness, allegedly linking Bourchashvili with sending two underage schoolboys to Syria. The witness is under witness protection. Part of the evidence has been classified as confidential by the prosecution. Pretrial hearing is scheduled for the 5th of August.
So this looks like a quite, open and shut case to a certain degree. This guy really does appear to have been attempting to recruit people to go and join IS in Syria. We know that there's a big problem about radicalization in the Panchisi Gorge. There's a question about whether going in, you know, in the ski marks with the Kalashnikovs and rounding people up in the middle of the night is really the best way to combat radicalization. I would suggest it probably isn't. However, what I would draw attention to is this guy's defense lawyer, who is Gela Nikolaishvili, who is claiming that he should not be sent to pretrial detention because he poses absolutely no threat to anybody, even though he's IS's recruiting sergeant in Georgia. And basically, wherever you see Nikolaishvili defending somebody, the chances are, he might not be guilty of that specific offense, but there's no smoke without fire in that specific set of circumstances.
Following up on previous month's stories, according to the Tbilisi City Court, accepted evidence that presented as a criminal case against Misha concerning the 2006 Girvliani murder case. Misha is charged with abuse of his official powers, which may be punished by 3 to 5 years in prison. The court allowed only part of the defense evidence to be submitted. The trial starts on the 6th of July. Defense Minister Tinikos Khidachely is in Brussels this week to visit NATO headquarters. On the 25th of June, there was a meeting of defense ministers from alliance member states and countries contributing to the Afghanistan mission. Khidachely said that Georgia will be firm in its demand that NATO grant membership action plan status the next summit of the alliance in Warsaw in 2016. This is Khidachely's second visit to NATO headquarters since taking office in early May.
I really don't know what Khidachely is doing here. She's demanding, she's said several times using the word demand, that Georgia gets a map at the Warsaw summit, which is, as far as I know, unless something has really changed behind the scenes, just not going to happen at all. So what's she going to do when she comes back from that Warsaw summit with nothing but the usual platitudes? You saw today the new U.S. ambassador to Georgia. He's just been confirmed by the Senate. In the hearings, he was asked pointedly several times by senators, about Georgia's NATO aspirations and about whether Georgia will be able to join NATO while the occupation of Abkhazia and South Ossetia continues. And I have to say that I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but the future U.S. ambassador to Georgia did not give very positive assessment of Georgia's chance of joining NATO while the occupation continues. Therefore, I just don't know what Khidachely expects to achieve by bandying around the word demand. It just seems like she's going to get burned by this, and she's going to take come back to Georgia empty-handed, which is only going to further alienate the Georgian people from their Euro-Atlantic goals. I don't see what you're trying to do.
But, you know, the problem is NATO is very involved in the Georgian military, and Georgia's not going to be a member of NATO anytime soon. Because the previous government made a big deal out of MAP, because John McCain and others made a big deal out of MAP. MAP was a big deal, and then it was like, well, we've got to get that, and then, you know, then Georgia didn't get it, and then so Misha made a big deal out of, well, because we didn't get MAP, you know, Russia had the green light to invade us in 2008, which, of course, is ridiculous, but it just sort of became a big deal. All right, so they said, okay, the political decision has been made, which is kind of what MAP is anyway, and it's all just a sort of big, it became a big sort of semantic scene, and it doesn't really need to be. The fact is, Georgia's not going to be a member of NATO anytime soon. Georgia is very much involved with NATO and NATO troops, and NATO training is involved as it wants to be. NATO loved Alassania. I'm not sure how they feel about Tinico. And so, you know, let's just move that. But her saying demand, at some point, I mean, she's going to have to say, okay, well, screw this NATO. And what... how that's going to be understood by the Georgian public, exactly as you say,
is just
a general feeling of, well, okay, our Euro-Atlantic aspirations are being spurned.
Well, here's the real thing about MAP, is MAP is not just a political decision. MAP is actually a multi-year, incredibly detailed program to join NATO. It's incredibly technical. It's almost like joining the EU in terms of bringing legislation, harmonizing legislation. It's a big deal. And the reason that it's so difficult for both Georgia and NATO perspective. Obviously, there's the NATO geopolitical concerns. There's the Germans and the French who aren't keen on this at all. But also, can you imagine the consequences of a multi-year MAP for Georgia? So let's say in Warsaw, Tina got her wish, and NATO said, yes, Georgia, here's a MAP. You'll be a member of NATO in 7 years. Can you imagine what Russia would do over the course of those 7 years to try and prevent Georgia from joining NATO? If there was a real timeline like that, Russia would do everything in its power, and it's got a lot of power, to stop Georgia achieving the MAP. So I think a MAP now...
But we're about to get missiles, so when they send their planes, we can shoot them down!
Basically, a MAP is... not only is it not on the table, but it's quite good that it's not on the table, because it would only spell trouble. If Georgia's ever going to join NATO, it's going to be bounced into NATO with a show of hands at one of these conferences, and there's not going to be a multi-year MAP. So what Tina thinks she's doing is completely beyond me.
Yeah. Speaking of women in important ministerial positions, Foreign Minister Tomiko Berucashvili is on a South American tour from the 22nd to the 26th of June. She's visiting Argentina, Uruguay, and Chile. During her visit, Berucashvili signed bilateral visa waivers with these three countries. Georgia already had a universal visa waiver for citizens of Argentina. It was included in the list of over 100 countries whose citizens can stay in Georgia without a visa for a year after the walk back from the incredibly goofy thing that they did a year ago for no reason anyone can figure out. In Buenos Aires, Berucashvili met with their Argentine counterpart and Vice President Amado, and the same figures in Uruguay. President Georgi Margvelashvili met British Prime Minister David Cameron in Slovakia on the 19th of June on the sidelines of the Bratislava Global Security Forum. He also had bilateral meetings with his Slovak, Croatian, and Polish counterparts, Prime Minister of Montenegro, U.S. Senator, who he referred to as my old friend, John McCain. Meeting McCain said that he would visit Georgia by all means. Margvelashvili also opened a Georgian-Slovak business forum in Bratislava during the visit. South Caucasus news. Thousands of people are protesting in Yerevan against rising electricity prices set for the 1st of August. Armenia's electricity network is owned by a subsidiary of the Russian company Interrao UES, whose main stakeholders include Russian state-controlled entities. The company says that the rise in prices by 16% is necessary because of the depreciation of the dram. Earlier in the week, riot police with water cannons dispersed the protest march. The protest march and arrested 2,000 demonstrators. About 6,000 protesters took to the streets again to march to the presidential palace on the 23rd of June and into the 24th. Officers in riot gear stood shoulder to shoulder to stop the crowd advancing. Protesters then staged a sit-in, stopped traffic before being dispersed with water cannons. There were clashes with police. Some people were detained, including journalists who had their equipment taken away in Tbilisi on the afternoon of the 24th of June. Crowd of a few dozen people gathered in front of the Armenian embassy in solidarity with the protesters in Yerevan. Following up on the budget cuts, a government session on the 23rd of June, Finance Minister Nodar Khaduri said that the state budget will be cut by 140 million lari to help compensate for the lari exchange rate and because of the damage of the floods. He presented an amended draft budget. The largest budget cuts will be Minister of Interior and Defense budget. The Ministry of Interior will be reduced by 15 million lari, focus on reduced expenditures on fuel, representative costs, and business trips. Capital and social expenditures will not be reduced. Tbilisi was granted an additional 44 million lari from the state budget to cover costs related to the flood in the upcoming European Youth Olympic Festival. More than 4,000 young athletes from 49 European countries will come to Georgia and participate in the competition from the 26th of July to the 1st of August. Check out the swimming pool contracts, by the way. Tbilisi City Hall will also borrow 18 million lari from the development fund and donor organizations for road repair work. The website biletebi.ge, which is responsible for selling tickets for the UEFA Super Cup 2015, went down Monday morning, the 22nd of June. FC Barcelona will play Sevilla FC at the Dinamo Arena in Tbilisi on the 11th of August. Tickets went on sale on the 22nd of June. Site administrator said the enormous amounts of users tried to enter the site at the same time, and UEFA had warned them about the possible difficulties during ticket sale period. Biletebi.ge received 45,000 euros from UEFA for handling ticket sales. Ticket sales are allowed only through Biletebi.ge, and it's prohibited at stadiums and elsewhere in order to avoid black market tickets. Site administrators also claimed that they were the target of a cyber attack, but later acknowledged that the servers failed to handle the huge traffic. Failure to launch the sale of tickets, as well as some of the contradictory explanations from the company, sparked anger among fans to get the UEFA Super Cup match tickets, who left angry messages on the Biletebi.ge Facebook page the evening of the 23rd of June. With the site still not functioning, the Georgia Football Federation said that it would resort to alternative options to sell tickets for the UEFA Super Cup match if the site were not restored within 24 hours. So Thursday evening, Biletebi apologized on their site for the problem and that they are waiting for a decision and advice from UEFA. Accountancy network BDO ranked Georgia as among the top 25% of countries for having an investment-friendly in their latest investment-friendly environment in their latest International Business Compass 2015 ranking. Georgia got an international ranking of 43 out of 174 countries, improving by 5 places compared to its 2014 ranking. Last week, Tbilisi hosted the 17th annual Black Sea Trade and Development annual meeting of the Board of Governors. The government selected Michael O'Boyle as the new special advisor on human rights and rule of law by invitation of Prime Minister Khadabashvili, and on the recommendation of the Council of Europe. O'Boyle worked at the European Court of Human Rights. He will replace Hammerberger, if you'll remember, who was sort of the person that they wanted to be dealing with rather than the person who was then head of the European Embassy. U.S. Department of State released its annual country report on terrorism on Georgia. It said that the Georgian government is largely capable of countering terrorism, but there are continuing concerns about Georgia as a transit and source country for international terrorism. Notes that between 50 and 100 Georgian nationals from Pankisi and Ajada were fighting in Syria and Iraq for either al-Qaeda affiliates or Islamic State. The report notes the last year Georgia enhanced its counterterrorism legislation and brought them into line with international best practices and made them more precise for use in criminal prosecutions, but then more focused particularly in the areas of economic development, community policing, prison reform, and outreach to Muslim communities would strengthen the government's ability to identify and provide alternatives to at-risk individuals. According to the Chief of the General Staff of the Armed Forces, Vakhtang Kapanadze, the Ministry of Internal Affairs has received Super Puma French helicopters. No more info for now. According to a report by the Washington-based Institute for the Study of War, Islamic State announced the creation of a new governorate that it claims will span several regions of the North Caucasus. Several journalists from the site renaissances.ge have been threatened by a radical Islamist named Javid Gurbanov in Marnaouli, who has said that he will spill their blood if they don't remove the cartoon from the site. The cartoon depicts people or students breaking out of bird cages while holding books, but the picture caused outrage among certain groups who believe that the picture shows that people are not breaking out of a bird cage, but out of a mosque.
It does look quite a lot like a mosque.
Well, what? It's got a little moon on top
or
something?
No, no. It's got, like, it's a big dome bird cage, and then there's two minaretti-shaped dome-shaped bird cages on either side. It does look like a sort of timbered mosque. I'm sure it's not deliberate, but you kind of, once you've read about it, and you're like, that sounds stupid, and then you say, oh, yeah, it does look a bit like a mosque. It does, I'm, you know.
I have not seen it. Okay, I trust you. I have not seen the picture. The journalist said that even when they tried explaining and clarifying what the cartoon shows, threats of Gurbanov continue, who sends them threatening phone calls and personal Facebook messages. The journalist filed a complaint with police. The Ethics Charter of Georgia published an appeals to law enforcement bodies to react adequately to threats and pressures against journalists, which, you know, Punkeasy is serious, but the idea of an Islamic fundamentalist in Marnouli somehow...
Let's hope that it remains unserious. I think that there is every risk of that. I mean, Azerbaijan are keeping a lid on things, but there's certainly plenty of Azeris have gone to fight for IS, as well as Chechens from the Punkeasy Gorge, and indeed a couple of Ajarans. I wouldn't laugh it off too quickly.
All right. Well, good. Hope somebody's paying attention to that. The first Yazidi Temple and Cultural Center opened in Tbilisi on the 23rd of June in Barkatili. The money to build it came from donations from the state. More than 2,000 guests attended the opening ceremony. There are two other Yazidi temples in the world, one in the Kurdistan region of Iraq and one in Armenia. According to the 2002 census, over 18,000 Yazidis lived in Georgia, but today the number is much less. By some estimates, around 6,000, including refugees from Shingal, Iraq, who came to Georgia fleeing from ISIS.
Having met some members of the Kurdish community, the Yazidi community here in Georgia, I'm really pleased about this. It's really cool to see them have a temple. I went to one of their weddings up in Bakatili a few years ago, and they are kind of amazing. Their rituals are fascinating and weird, and long may they remain part of Georgia's rich fabric.
Yeah, I've not been to any weddings, but have met several Yazidi cab drivers throughout the years, and they really are a cool bunch. I will say, I mean, that 18,000 number dropping to six is a little depressing. On the other hand, the 2002 census was completely ridiculous. So who knows? But I hope that Yazidis can live at peace in Iraq now and soon. But if not, that there are plenty of them here. Finance Ministry's investigative service uncovered a case of baby trafficking. Allegedly, nine people were arrested at two maternity clinics, including the director of Rustavi Maternity House and his deputy, and one of the owners of the new maternity house center. Investigators say the arrested ran a scheme to sell newborns that they would negotiate with mothers coming in for consultations and try to convince them to give up their newborn children. They reportedly managed to sell two babies, one for 3,000 lari, another for $5,000. If convinced, the suspects may face 14 to 17 years in jail. As of the 24th of June, the Tbilisi is entirely on Google Maps, covering 3,500 kilometers of road networks and 16,000 buildings. Earlier, only parts of Tbilisi were on Google Maps. The process of adding Tbilisi to Google Maps was initiated and organized by the public registry. Gori is the next town to be added, and Rustavi, Mskheta, and Poti are due to be added by the end of this year. A Ukrainian businessman bought at auction buildings and constructions on over 1,800 square meters of land in the village of Kveda in Ajada. According to agreement with the Ministry of Finance of Ajada, the investor is obligated to invest $80,000 in the village and build no less than a 10-room hotel within 12 months after signing the contract, and to launch a hotel in 24 months. Georgian soldiers serving the NATO-led Resolute Support Mission in Afghanistan found buried chemical explosives on the 22nd of June. They noticed the suspicious materials during their 12-hour patrol around the German base camp Marmal and notified a group of expert engineers, who then cleaned the site. 36-year-old Georgian man was taken captive by Russian border guards near the ABL with South Ossetia on the 24th of June, the same day there was an incident prevention and response mechanism meeting. On the 20th of June, there were high winds in Marnouli municipality causing some damage. The wind toppled trees, which crashed into several houses and blocked roads in the surrounding villages. There was also heavy rainfall and hail, which caused flooding that destroyed agricultural lands. More than 1,000 local children with disabilities will spend their summer holidays in the five-star Golden Fleece Hotel in Anaklia. Groups of about 75 children and their parents will spend 2 weeks there on rotation. Holiday was arranged by Tbilisi City Hall. On the 22nd of June, race car driver David Kajaya won a class victory at the FIA European Touring Car Cup in Slovakia. He dedicated his victory to the victims of the Tbilisi flood and encouraged people to donate to the cause. folk dance company Sukashvilevi is preparing to celebrate their 70th year anniversary. They're holding a special anniversary concert at the Philharmonia on the 27th of June. Now the concert will be dedicated to victims of the Tbilisi flood, and all money raised from ticket sales will be donated to the relief fund. A 23-year-old tennis player, Nicolas Basilashvili, won the first qualification match for the Wimbledon tournament, defeating his Romanian opponent. Georgian advertising company Leaving Stone was recognized at the Cannes Lions International Festival of Creativity. They presented their advertisement statue just for loving beer, promoting beer company Nahtakari in its new product 34 Beer, which was awarded for its creativity. Basically, the ad is that they put a high price for the beer in shops to make it look fancy, and whoever bought it, they later put a statue up for them with the beer. Georgian wine producers won more than 20 awards, 4 silver and 16 bronze, at the Decanter World Wine Awards in London. Georgian blueberries will soon appear on the shelves of Walmart in the UK, according to the Georgian government, although exact dates are not specified. As a reminder, a multi-million dollar blueberry plantation and processing plant was established several months ago on a 70-hectare piece of land in Laituri village in Ozurgeti. I didn't know there were Walmarts in the UK. Are there really?
There are no Walmarts in the UK. They maybe own some other brand.
Oh, really? No, I never saw a Walmart in the UK. Parliamentary news. The Justice Ministry introduced a package of legislative amendments to prevent violence against women. The amendments apply to about 20 different sections of laws and will target illegal spying, communication by phone or other electronic means to threaten women or family members, and will prohibit forcing someone to get an abortion or be sterilized. The amendments will target not only domestic violence against women, but also violence outside of the family home. Currently, the victim of domestic violence can get free legal consultations and 30 days off from work while spending time in a shelter. But with the new changes, a woman can also get those services if she's subject to violence from someone outside of the home. A person charged with violence against women will be prohibited from carrying a weapon if he owns one or carries a service arm. If the perpetrator receives warnings or restraining orders, the weapon will be taken from him. As a reminder, in late 2014, Parliament approved an amendment prohibiting forced marriage. The meme this week is a photo on Twitter of a new version of the Georgian flag in the place of four crosses, four hippos. Second meme this week from protesters in Yerevan, a protester is sitting next to a row of riot police cooking shashlik on a grill, showing they're having a good time. Although the one I saw is that really great one of the guy flipping off the water cannon, which is a truly beautiful demonstration shot. Things to read. Democracy and Freedom Watch reports on Zemo Alvani and the disappearing BOTSP language. Wall Street Journal has rankings of the most and least expensive cities in the world for expats. Tbilisi's up there on the list of least expensive cities worldwide. Note that they categorize Tbilisi in Asia, showing how little the Wall Street Journal knows about anything. Gheorghe Lomsadze for Eurasia on false predator alarms and how to put a tiger to sleep in Tbilisi. National Public Radio in the U.S. has a piece on Misha popping up in Ukraine. Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty on tech-savvy civic movement leading the Armenian protests. A blog post by one on CRC's, one of CRC's junior fellows on what gets you a job in Georgia, connections or education. Agenda.ge follows some of the Georgian athletes at the Baku European Games with a video of rhythmic gymnast, which is very cool and includes some elements of Georgian dancing. All these things to read posted on the forum. This week's GeoCapital number is 5,644. This is Misha's reported monthly salary as the governor of Odessa in hryvnias, Ukrainian national currency, which is about $270, at least today. Misha said this week that he will not be able to remain on the governor's post for more than a year with that salary. He also revealed on his Facebook page that before taking the Odessa post, his annual salary was about $200,000 from D.C.'s International Institute of Leadership, and that he had which nobody's ever heard of, by the way, and that he had additional income from delivering lectures and public speeches. He says public service is more important than money. In London, on the 26th of June at 7 p.m., Georgian UK-based singer Keddie Meloa and friends is hosting an aid event for victims of the Tbilisi flood near Covent Garden, 50 pounds at the door. RSVP to info@cartvelli.com. That's CARTVELI.com, beginning with a C, not K. Georgian Delicacies, wine, artwork, and souvenirs will be on sale. You can also choose which cause to support: families whose homes were destroyed, the dog shelter, or the zoo. On that note, in Tbilisi, Georgian artists are hosting a charity exhibition and sale of handmade arts and crafts at the National Parliamentary Library. The exhibition will continue until the 28th of June. All money raised will be donated to people who lost loved ones or their homes in the flood. There is also a charity concert at Magti Club on the 30th of June at 8 p.m. Tickets are 10 lari, organized by We Help, featuring Georgian band The Bear Fox. Tbilisi on the 28th of June is Car Free Tbilisi, organized by the NGO of the same name. They challenge everyone to leave your car at home and to walk instead. It's a Sunday, and ideally it will be Car Free Tbilisi for one day that month. This is the very first one. That's it for this week. My address, Twitter address, is at TXTBUK. That is Tango X-Ray Tango Bravo Uniform Kilo. Our email is tbilpod@gmail.com, or post to the forum on our website, www.tbilpod.com. We will finish with, from 1991, Cypress Hill and Tres Equis.
Cuando se lo metí